Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahanau Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So now the two armies have come out onto the battlefield and are making, you know, prayers. I mean, making arrangements for the battle. So then now we see with the Pandava side. According to their battle plan, the Pandava army arranged and rearranged itself in different formations, moving their leading warriors about the field and confounding the Kauravas, right? Because otherwise you move into one thing and then you see that and then they'll reorder and then you go into another one, because different ones, depending upon what you are, there's a counter to it. Everyone has a counter. So they'll go into a position, then they'll think, oh, okay, and then you redo it and then they'll have to do it. So you just keep doing the different ones to you know, they won't know what's going on. In response, the Kauravas also moved their divisions about in various ways, so that the Pandavas would not easily see their plan of attack. As the two immense armies maneuvered around the field, a huge dust cloud rose into the sky, screening the morning sun. Thousands of elephants made the earth vibrate as they moved across the field, resembling dark clouds. The formations of chariot fighters with their polished golden cars seemed, in contrast to the elephant divisions, like clusters of brilliant luminaries in the night sky. So they're like dark clouds, and these are like luminaries in the sky, right? Because then the dark clouds are the elephants, and then you have the chariot drivers. Remember, there's a chariot driver, and then he has X amount of elephants, and there's X amount of horses, and X amount of foot soldiers. Each time it increases, I think, by 10. So therefore, then you have them, then you're going to have the elephants, and you're going to have the chariots. So it's going to look like the dark clouds and then luminaries in the night sky. Behind both armies, their encampments stretched for miles, looking with the rows of tents and shops like two large towns. They were bustling with cooks, servants, and tradespeople going about their business. All the warriors had left for the battle, which would last until sunset. Right, so it's a whole thing set up. So it's not like the modern where you're trying to bring in things and there people are destroying those things and bomb. No, you set up your camp, you set up the other one. Then you have things come in, so you have all your people, and then the tradespeople come in to sell stuff, because you're going to need stuff, right? That you're going to need foods and medicines and this and that. So they'll have brought so much with them, but then they come also to sell, and maybe there's some interesting things that are there. And so then, like that. And those who are in the encampments don't have to worry that they're going to be attacked, because the battle is between the Kshatriyas, not for anyone else. So this modern thing where in a battle then the common people get injured or killed, that's just nonsense. It should be a fight with warriors. It has nothing to do with the common person, because the common person, they go about their work, and Kshatriyas, they manage these people, you know, so that everything's safe, it's structured, everything is prosperous and peaceful. So if there's a battle between the two, it only concerns them, because the common person, they just do their duties. Their duties is not to take part in the war. Right? It's the Kshatriyas, they take part in the war. So that means the Brahmins, Vaishyas, Shudras don't have to take care, unless they're Shudras who are foot soldiers, because you do have Shudras who they are the assistants for Kshatriyas, and so they may fight. Or you might have Brahmins as doctors who are out on that, but they're not out fighting like this. So you don't, when the battle is over and everything, then the kingdom goes on normal, so that the people themselves aren't going to suffer. That's the standard point. Gradually the two armies closed on each other. Hundreds of thousands of conchas filled the air with their blasts. The beating of drums and blowing of trumpets created a cacophony of sound that mixed with the elephants' majestic cries. Countless banners fluttered from chariots, appearing like waves of bright colors amid the assembled troops. The commanders of the two sides met to agree on the rules of battle. Warriors should only fight with equals and with equal weapons. No one should strike another without warning, but should first challenge him. One who has surrendered or one fleeing from the fight should never be struck down. Many servants on the battlefield carrying weapons and other paraphernalia were also not to be killed. Right? Because you could say, oh, but then, you know, they're carrying weapons, they're aiding in the thing, so if I kill them, it'll stop. No, they're just carrying weapons. You know, they're not the cause of your problem. You know, it's like the modern thing is saying, they'll say there'll be so much violence, and then it'll be said, oh, because there's guns. No, it's because people use guns. If there were no guns, then they would be using knives or, you know, clubs or, you know, shoes or a brick or anything like that. The point is weapons get used in a harmful way because people use them. They don't themselves do something like that. You know, it's like no one has a problem walking into a gun shop that the guns themselves are going to shoot them. You know, it's just, no, it's like that. So the same way is that these are assistants, they just do their duty. So at the point in the Vedic culture, everyone's doing their duty. So Kshatriyas also, it's their duty to fight and establish, you know, the righteous rule. And so they're just doing their duty, so you don't bother someone doing their duty. The commander spoke for some time. When all the rules had been established, Drishtadyumna became thoughtful. Duryodhana and his henchmen had never shown such regard for righteousness. Why would they now observe rules, especially if the battle was not going their way? As Bhishma's generals were about to leave, Drishtadyumna voiced his doubts. We will respect these stipulations, but I make one provision. The Kauravas forget their agreement and fight without respect for the rules, then we too shall adopt whatever tactics we deem appropriate. We will not, however, be the first to break the conditions. So be it, Bhishma replied. He took his leave from Drishtadyumna, and the warriors returned to their positions to prepare for the start of the battle, right? Because the commanders came, so that means the commanders, that would mean on Duryodhana's side he had 11 commanders, and on Pandava's side they had 7 commanders. But the point is them coming there, then, you know, and the head one's going to talk. So Bhishma is going to talk and Drishtadyumna is going to talk. And like that, then they're going to discuss. And so then, and as you pointed out, Duryodhana's never been righteous in anything up to now. Why would they be now? Because maybe Bhishma would think like that and others, but if Duryodhana and that, they don't fight properly, then they're not going to then they make it clear, we will fight however we deem necessary. We might fight religiously at that point, because we feel that in that position, you know, we'll still be able to conquer whoever is dealing in an inappropriate way. But if not, then we won't be the first ones to do it, to break the rules. Because he's expecting, if anyone would break, it would be Duryodhana and his son. And Bhishma said, so be it, because Bhishma is going to follow. But, you know, with time, so many things will happen. Dhritarashtra sat anxiously in his palace. There was nothing he could do but wait. Wanting to share his feelings with someone and missing the association of Vidura, the old king called for Sanjaya and said, tell me what is now happening, O Sanjaya. Have the two armies reached Kurukshetra? Destiny is more powerful than all of man's endeavors. Even though I tried to restrain my son, aware as I am of the horrors of war, I was unsuccessful. Why was that, O wise Sanjaya? Although I can see Duryodhana's folly, still I have not been able to stop him. Surely this war has been divinely ordained. Besides, it is always honorable for a Kshatriya to die in battle, right? So you always have this point of Dhritarashtra, is that anything he wants to do but it doesn't work, he'll just say it's destiny, which is fine. You're making an honest endeavor, doing the appropriate action, and it works out some another way, then you know destiny's there. But even if you perform your action correctly and appropriately and you get a good result, that's still destiny. But generally, he only brings this up when something that he wanted to do, when he's not behaving right, and it still happens, then he'll say, oh, it's destiny, what can we do? You know, I tried to stop the war, but all he had to do to stop the war was stop Duryodhana. If he had just checked Duryodhana, there would be no war. You know, there would be no problem. The Kauravas and the Pandavas would be living together peacefully, you know, for the last 14 years. But because he wouldn't, and then he's saying, oh, I tried my best, you know. But, you know, yes. Sanjaya felt he did not have much more to say, right? He's already said, I mean, this is 14 years later. How many times can you say it in 14 years? He had tried many times to point out how the blame for the disaster facing the Kurus rested not only with Duryodhana, but with the king himself. Yet the king seemed unable to admit it. O king, surely a man who meets with calamities as a result of his own acts should not blame either the gods, destiny, or others. Each of us receives the just rewards of our own actions. O leader of the Kurus, you have failed to act virtuously. The Pandavas have borne your son's persecution, always hoping that you would deliver justice in the end, but you have not done so. Now all that is left is for you to hear of the Kuru heroes being slaughtered, right? So he wouldn't, because he wouldn't check his son, but what he'll, all he'll hear is about how all of them died. So there'll be, you know, basically no one left. Means literally. But what to do? As you pointed out, the point is, so he's saying Duryodhana is behaving badly, so this, but the point is you're the king. You could have done something. As Sanjay spoke, Vyasadeva suddenly entered the chamber. The Rishi, who could see past, present, future, said, O great king, your sons and all the other kings have now arrived at the end of their lives. They have assembled for battle and will all kill one another. Remembering the changes that are inevitable brought about by time, do not grieve. O child, if you wish to see the battle, I will give you the ability. Dhritarashtra sighed, I do not desire to see my sons die, O great sage. Simply let me hear of the battle. Then I shall bestow the ability to see upon Sanjaya. Vyasadeva replied, by my grace you will be able to see everything that takes place at Kurukshetra. With celestial vision he will see even things that are concealed and all that happens at night. He will feel no exhaustion for the duration of the war. As for victory, that will occur wherever there is righteousness. Regardless of who wins, however, you should know that almost all the warriors on both sides will be slain. This is what the omens say. So he's saying it's no matter who wins, but there'll basically be no one left. Even if Duryodhana won, who would be left? You know, so, you know, now he's emperor of the world. Emperor of what world? You know, where are the kings? Where are the, you know? Vyasadeva described the portents, earthly and celestial, which predicted destruction. Thousands of carnivorous birds were alighting on treetops, crying in glee. Herons, uttering harsh cries, were flying towards the south. The sun was screened by tree-colored clouds at both twilights. In temples, the images of gods perspired and trembled, and sometimes dropped from their positions. All this indicates a great slaughter. Many heroic kings will sleep forever, embracing the earth as if she were a lover. Vyasadeva also described how the planets were aligned in malefic formations. After speaking for some time, he concluded, know that these signs point towards an annihilation of the Kshatriyas. There can be no doubt. Dhritarashtra lifted his face towards the Rishi. Surely this war has been divinely ordained, O sage. Will not all the Kshatriyas attain the regions reserved for heroes, thereby experiencing unending happiness? By giving up their lives in battle, certainly they will receive fame in this life and joy in the next. Vyasadeva did not answer immediately. He concentrated his mind in meditation, then replied, time destroys the universe and all its creatures. Nothing in this world lasts forever. Only virtue lasts along with the soul when all else has been destroyed. Therefore, point your sons to the right path. All of you should follow Krishna's will. The eternal being has personally shown virtue's proper course, but you did not accept it. The slaughter of men, especially kinsmen, can never produce good. The Vedas always condemn it. You are still able to prevent this, prevent what is about to transpire, my son. But you do not do so because you are attached to the kingdom. Your virtue is quickly failing. You have allowed your son, who has been born as death personified for your family, to lead the Kurus to ruin. Right? So he still could send a quick messenger to Kurukshetra. And even though, yes, something is there, but he could stop the fight and just say, you know, all right, this is there. But his point is he doesn't want to give up the kingdom. And even he's sitting on the throne, but specifically wants his son to be able to inherit the throne. So not being able to give up that throne because it was his brother's, Pandu's, and he was only supposed to act, you know, in between while no one's there. But as soon as the Pandavas arrive, then they're supposed to sit on the throne once they're trained. So this is stopping him. And because this is what he wants, and his son also wants that, and he's attached to his son, naturally then he goes in that course. He was never interested in the kingdom, and his son was always pushing that. Then it might have turned out in a different way. But no, that's what he wants, And so when his son is going for that, even though he knows how he's going about it is wrong, he still hopes that maybe we can get it, right? You know, because they were irreligious, and still they got the kingdom for 13 years. So maybe it's just destiny. You know, even though I'm behaving badly, it's destiny, I will get good results. But what he forgets is that that may be, but those good results aren't coming because of the effect of what you've done badly. They're coming from previously what you've done in previous lives that's been good, and you're getting the result now, despite doing bad. But the bad that you do now, its fruit in the future will be destruction. So he's not understanding how destiny works. He just looks at the immediate. Because you see, his people who he listens to and all that, they're all teaching niti. Niti means you deal with what's happening right now. What would be the diplomacy and the thing to do right now to get your... In other words, what to do to get the result I want no matter what. So in other words, certain things are foolish. And so let's say picking a fight with someone bigger than you, that's foolish. So Niti says don't do that. It's not so much of a righteous thing, it's just that it's stupid, because if you do, you won't get the result you want. So Niti simply shows you how to get proper, how to get results you want. That's supposed to be seen in line with the Dharma Shastra. It means what things you, it was within the context of your duty that you want. Then using Niti, that will help in the minute details of application. But you don't use Niti as the top thing and then say that, oh, destiny, what is, you know, destiny means it's based on what you do as your duties. And since he's not performing his duty properly, therefore the result will not be good. Dhritarashtra hung his head as his father continued to criticize him in strong words, his voice breaking the still silence of the empty chamber. What is the value of a kingdom gained through sin and earning only sin? O king, protect your good name and your virtue. You will then be able to attain heaven. Let the Pandavas have their kingdom and let the Kauravas have peace. Right? Because he's asking, but in any case, even if, you know, they have the battle and everyone dies, but because they died on the battlefield, they'll all go to heaven and then they'll all enjoy there. So in his mind is, here we may be acting unrighteously, but, you know, then we have the kingdom and, you know, we're enjoying facilities here. And if we have the battle, if we don't win, then they'll all go to heavenly planets and enjoy there. So in any case, we're doing okay, right? So that's why then Vyasadeva points out the principle of... in here that everything in the material world is temporary. So being temporary, then even you do go to the heavenly plane, it's temporary. It's still, don't look at it as something glorious. Dhritarashtra was embarrassed before the sage. His pathetic voice pleaded in reply, O Rishi of immeasurable power, your words are without fault. I also know what you know. Please believe that I am not inclined towards sin. My sons will not obey me. I've tried my best. Do not forsake me. Right? So he said, I tried my best, simply just to talk to them, and if they didn't. But trying his best is if the son is acting as an enemy and will destroy the whole family, in fact, you know, all the whole Kshatriya race, then why won't you just tell the guards to lock him up? But he'll never do that. You are able to protect my fame and virtue. See me as an ordinary man whose intentions are good, but whose power is limited. But then he shouldn't be in a position that commands power. He's an ordinary man, you know, he's washes clothes or something like that, and he's trying to tell his son to, you know, stop taking the donkey out and going for joy rides when they need it to go pick up clothes, and he won't listen, you know, so what can he do? You know, like that, but he's the king. You know, so he says, oh, great one, you are the respected grandfather of all the Kurus. Be gracious to me. Right? So he just wants good, no matter what. So that's the whole point of the Niti. It's self-centered and all that. Though he knows the Shastra and all that, but he can't apply it. So he's not actually a wise man. He knows, but he can't use it. So that's the thing in the Vedas. Who knows and applies it, practices it, that's actual wisdom. That's actual knowledge. So then we will see, you know, next discussion and how this discussion, how it continues, and where everything will stand. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.